Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As many as 51 trillion microplastics litter our oceans. Microplastics are about the size of a sesame seed and are harmful to underwater life. Sometimes more than 100 pieces of microplastics are found in a single fish. When fifth graders at PS 15 in Red Hook, Brooklyn, started learning about the root causes of plastic pollution and microplastics, they decided to take action. For 2 years, they investigated the local and global impacts of plastic marine pollution. By taking on the role of citizen scientists and community activists, they used their own local data to inform policy and rallied for change at City Hall before turning their focus back to their school, where their actions eliminated all single-use plastic from their cafeteria. And this is really amazing. After students educated the community about plastic, the amount of litter in their community was reduced by 40%. Their story is the subject of Microplastic Madness, a new documentary being featured at this year's 12th annual Bay Area International Children's Film Festival. It's this weekend at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California. And if you are in the area, Microplastic Madness is screening on Saturday at 1 p.m. and Sunday at noon. And you can find more information about all of the incredible films at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by Maggie Delancourt. She's a seventh grader at Brooklyn Urban Garden Charter School. Maggie is the co-narrator of Microplastic Madness, where she was featured along with fifth graders from PS 15 on their two-year journey of plastic-free action and advocacy. Hi, Maggie. Thank you so much for joining us. I was so inspired by all of the work you and your friends did. It's really amazing.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Debbie Lee Cohen, co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness. Debbie is founder and executive director of the environmental education organization CafeteriaCulture.org, and they work with young people to achieve zero-waste schools and plastic-free waters. Debbie led the Styrofoam Out of Schools campaign, which eliminated 500 million plastic styrofoam trays per year from landfills and student meals in New York City and 9 other cities. Debbie, your work is so inspiring too. Thank you so much for joining us, and I loved the film.
Oh, thank you so much for having us on the call today. We're super excited to share our movie and to premiere it in California this weekend.
Well, that's fantastic. And you know, we do so many shows about plastic pollution and how it is so horrible and how it affects underwater life. But this is just so inspiring that you were able to get so much plastic out of so many communities across the country. So thank you so much for joining us. We're also joined by Jim Capobianco, writer, director, and storyboard artist. Jim is co-creator of the Bay Area International Children's Film Fest. He's been with the Film Fest since the beginning. In 2008, Jim received the Academy Award nomination for Best Original Screenplay for Ratatouille, and he has worked for Walt Disney and Pixar Animation Studios, where he has worked on many of Pixar's great films over the last 18 years. And Jim joins us in studio. Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Such a pleasure.
Well, it's great to have you, Jim. I have to say, we do shows every year on the Green Film Fest, the Ocean Film Fest, and some of the other film festivals, but I was not familiar with the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival, and I want to make this now a yearly tradition because there's so many great films. I mean, this is our One Planet series, so we're definitely going to spend most of the hour talking about plastic, but you also have this great film, a screening called Child of Nature,
yes,
which looks at, gosh, children who live in places where there's war, poverty, hunger, and abuse. And these kids are working to change their lives and their communities. Another really inspiring film.
Yeah, that's a fantastic film by a Brazilian filmmaker named Marcos Negros. And he is trying to go around the world filming children who are changing their communities, are empowered to make a difference in, you know, in the troubles that they're all dealing with. They're kind of like multiple Greta Thunbergs all over doing just, but not just about climate change. It's about, It may be about providing toys for a young for their community who all the kids live on the streets, or they're teaching. One story is beautiful where there's young refugee Syrian girls come to are in their refugee community who are like 10 and 11, but they act as the teachers to all the little kids in the community. And these girls in Germany find out about them, and they end up raising money for the girls in Syria. It's a tremendous documentary, and it's beautifully shot as well. And both that and Microplastic Madness are two documentaries that I feel they don't get exposure like main documentaries do. Mm-hmm. I'm part of the Academy, and we just looked at all the international, the documentary film submissions. And I feel like both of these films could easily qualify for Academy Award consideration. They're just brilliant, but nobody sees them because they're about children. People don't focus on children like they should.
It is so important. The Child of Nature trailer is really powerful. And this film, Child of Nature, will be screening next Saturday at 5:15 p.m. and Sunday at 1 p.m. And again, that's at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California, if you're in the area. We have a lot of listeners who are out of state. So how can they see some of the films we're talking about today?
I don't know. Hopefully Microplastic Madness will get out there more. Maybe Debbie could speak to that. I'm hoping, people who hear this show will actually want to see these films and maybe get them programmed into their communities.
Yes.
And film festivals there.
Debbie, will the film be traveling, and can people out of the area see it?
Yes. In fact, on our website, microplasticmadness.org, you can click on host a screening, and all schools, organizations, conferences can actually sign on, fill out a request form to request a screening. If you're from a Title I school, it's free. Our goal is really to get the message out there, and especially to get the message out to new audiences and audiences that may not be participating necessarily in all of the film festivals where a film is being shown.
Okay, that's fantastic. And so if you would like to bring the film to your school, find more information about Microplastic Madness and the other films, show it at the festival. There's a panel discussion on women authors inspiring young artists. That's Saturday at 1:45. That looks amazing. The Power of Knowledge. They've got educational shorts. And then I love this one also, Voting is Power. They have a number of films about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Schoolhouse Rock, The Great American Melting Pot, International Day, Suffrage. I mean, this is really amazing. These films are amazing. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Maggie, you are now a seventh grader, and you were the co-narrator of Microplastic Madness. And this happened when you were in fifth grade. What was it like for you to narrate a documentary about the great work that you and your friends did at PS15?
Well, I mean, it was such an amazing experience, the things we got to do for narrating the movie. And to be one of the main narrators was so amazing, to have it shown at a lot of places now, and my voice, it's just an amazing experience. And the experiences I got to do during that time were just so amazing. Also, the recording studio we got to work at for the voiceover and the narration was so amazing. The people we worked with for it were awesome. I mean, really amazing.
Debbie, how did you first learn about the incredible work that Maggie and her friends at PS15 were doing on plastic pollution?
Well, we brought the program to their school. So we're in a unique position that we're not only the producers of the movie, we're also the environmental nonprofit organization that's running the program. And so we came to that school not with an intention originally to make a feature documentary. Although we do come in with cameras, and it's hard work to get permission from New York City schools and then from all the parents to get permission to film in classes, but that's a big part of all of the work that we do. And we received a grant, a competitive grant, a plastic-free waters grant from the U.S. EPA Region 2, and we led the program in three schools, and we chose PS15, Maggie's former school, as one of the schools to lead this program. And each one of the schools services a community that a lot of the kids live in public housing, not all of them. Some of the schools are on the front line of climate change. So we had criteria that we thought would be interesting. There was a lot of litter in all of the neighborhoods, as there's a lot of litter all over New York.
Yes.
And a lot of plastic litter. So we had this vision, well, what would happen if students became leaders, not just in their school? We had already been doing school leadership programs with zero waste cafeterias, and we thought, what if we take that, those leadership roles out onto the street, and then we use data, and data that students would collect that actually the city doesn't even have. It doesn't exist. And we use that data to help inform policy. And so this was also the first time that we had the opportunity to lead a program for more than 1 year with the same students. And that was amazing. So the movie itself is more, it's even more than just about plastic reaction and these amazing students. And I don't think it was our intention when we were making the movie, but now in retrospect, when we, the directors, producers, look at it, we can see that actually it speaks very well for an argument for climate literacy and innovative climate and plastic-free education in schools across the country.
That is so true. And did you say, Debbie, that the city of New York did not have this data?
They don't have block-by-block data. Most cities don't. I mean, Japan, Tokyo is one of the few cities where someone developed an app, and people can easily collect data by just taking videos. And we actually use that technology. We tested it here in New York. But in general, it's not that the cities don't have, New York City doesn't have data about garbage, and they know there's litter. But in terms of litter hotspots and amounts, there isn't a lot of data. And so part of what we saw was, well, here's an opportunity for our students to participate in citizen science and really make a difference. And we'll know soon, for instance, we'll go back to some of the blocks that we collected data 2 years ago and even 4 years ago. And now with the plastic bag bill finally going to be enacted on March 1st in all of New York State, we'll be able to see, will that make a difference?
Wow.
With students.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Maggie, when you first took part in this plastic-free waters program, just talk about what it was like for you and your friends, because it was really amazing in the film to watch you all have access to scientists. You were able to ask questions, you know, respond to videos. The one that really got me, I love dolphins, is the dolphin that was spinning in circles because it had a plastic bag hanging over its mouth, and it was so irritated by this bag, it didn't know what to do. So you all learned so much in this program. What really stood out for you, and, you know, what was your experience like?
Well, I mean, PS15 was always a very, very go green kind of school. But once we got introduced with cafeteria culture, it was an experience that not many other kids are able to have. And I'm really, like, happy and, like, proud of myself that I got to, like, have this experience. It was just really nice, and all the trips and all the things and everything we were able to learn about that other schools and other kids and other classes from years before in PS15 weren't able to, like, learn about or do, was just really amazing and really cool.
Debbie, this plastic-free waters program, you said that you've done this in 3 schools. Is this kind of information spreading out to other schools? Because, I mean, we need this in every school.
Oh, thank you. Well, yes, it is. And actually, we've done it in more than 3 schools. We did that particular funded program from EPA in 3 schools. But now what we're doing is we're actually sharing the curriculum in 3 units with schools everywhere for free. So we have the first unit ready to go, and that's the citizen science unit, and that's all around collecting street litter and beach litter data and then comparing and understanding about the combined sewer overflow issue, because you can look at what you find on your streets and what you find at the beach and compare that as a student, and it makes a deeper connection of how litter becomes a more of a global pollutant rather than a marine pollutant rather than just a local pollutant. And but we've been actually teaching this curriculum. We started all the way back in 2012, some aspects of it, and we were inspired by our students, and in particular students who were from Caribbean families who were really interested in marine plastic pollution, and then we kept on teaching it, and now we're super excited to be sharing this curriculum, and you can see so much of it actually portrayed in the movie. So, you know, teachers, just like everybody else, they enjoy, you know, they don't necessarily want to just read more documents at night to do research. So it's an exciting way to engage teachers and administrators of schools, also to try new curriculum that can be easily integrated into the curriculum they already have, not just in the science class, but also in ELA or in social studies or even an after-school program. So we've tried to really make this so it's as accessible as possible. And we have two more units coming soon that also look more at the whole systems of and the life cycles of different kinds of plastics, which you also see in the movie, and then also take action components and how to use media and storytelling and data all combined to really inform change and meet with your policymakers to actually accelerate plastic-free legislation and regulations.
And Debbie, for educators who are listening right now, if they want to integrate this curriculum into the classroom, what's the best way they can go about getting in touch?
Well, we're about to set up a Google form where you can sign up for the curriculum. We don't have it up yet. In the meantime, you can email us at info@cafeteriaculture.org.
Great.
And we should have that form up by the end of this week. So then we can keep track of what grades you're teaching, where your school is, and that will also help us to increase our funding because we're a tiny, underfunded organization who gives everything away for free, which is not a great business model, but we're so committed to really making change as quickly as possible.
Wow. Debbie Lee Cohen is co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness. It's an incredible film that features students from Red Hook, Brooklyn, fifth graders taking on the plastic pollution crisis. And after they become citizen scientists and educate the community, there's one scene where they actually go in to small corner stores and they hand out reusable bags. And after they did that and then also put up signs in public spaces, the amount of litter in their community was reduced by 40%, which is so incredible. So you can see Microplastic Madness as part of the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival. If you're in the Bay Area, this Saturday at 1 and this Sunday at noon, it's at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California. We're also joined by Maggie Dalencourt, a seventh grader at Brooklyn Urban Garden Charter School, and she's co-narrator of Microplastic Madness. She's featured along with her fifth grade classmates on this two-year journey. And Jim Capobianco is co-creator of the Bay Area International Children's Film Fest. He's been with them since the beginning. Jim, what really stood out for you in Microplastic Madness? As you said, it could be part of the Green Film Fest, even the Ocean Film
it's
Fest.
True, yeah. You know, this year our theme is the power of kids. Mm. And when this film came to us, I believe it was submitted to us, and I looked at it and I just said, well, this film is all about the empowerment of kids and this message of... Actually, personally, I have been going through an anti-plastic thing in my life where I'm trying to remove plastic as much as I can. It's really very impossible, but as much as I can from my own buying habits and everything else. And then, so this film came through, and I was like, oh, I have to. This has got to go in. So I'm also the programmer of the festival, so I get to kind of decide what ends up in the festival. So it fit our theme. It fit our educational sort of mandate of the festival that we do, because we do hold it at Chabot Space and Science Center. We do try to, although we show entertainment films and all sorts of films from all over the world, we're also trying to lean into kind of an educational aspect to films. And I think I always feel like films that focus in an educational way can also be entertaining. And I found the techniques done in Microplastic Madness, a little bit of animation in there, because I have this animation background. I do have a fondness for that when that shows up. It was so charming. I just loved the animation.
I loved it too.
So instantly I was like, oh, this has got to go into the festival. And then we also, with something like this, we like to put kind of build some stuff around it. So we're going to have some hands-on activities going on as well during it. We have on Sunday, Tierney Ties, who is a National Geographic explorer, who is also doing a lot in the anti-plastic world, trying to get plastic out of the ocean. She's a marine biologist. And she has a thing she's doing called Around the World in 80 Fabrics, where she's trying to source fabrics from all over the world, from natural, from like native peoples and stuff that do not use plastics in them. And so she is going to do a lab and do some hands-on activities that are based on activities that are done in the documentary. And she'll be doing those after the festival and throughout the day.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, well, if you're in the area, I hope you can go to the Bay Area International Children's Film Fest. Again, it is this weekend at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Maggie, you talked about the field trips, and it was great to watch you all, you know, go to Jamaica Beach, for example, and take part in your first plastic cleanup. And you put things in different boxes, like what has already disintegrated, what hasn't. Talk about what that experience was like to be actually out in the field and to interact with so much trash and plastic.
Well, wow, that was so long ago. But to go there and to experience everything, like what went on, and to see like how much plastic and how much litter was on that beach, and we saw so many like birds, see like different types of animals there, and to see how much garbage there was like almost like breathtaking. And after we collected all of it, and after we sorted it and put it on charts and everything, to lay out and just to look and see how much plastic there was like so crazy, and just like how much litter and how much like plastic ends up to our beaches and oceans. It's just so crazy to see once you're looking at it like face to face.
How much did you know about plastic before you started on this journey?
I mean, it was brought up in our school a little bit. It was talked about, not that much. It was talked about very few. And to be honest, before this, I didn't know too much and wasn't educated that much on this topic.
And Maggie, the other thing that struck me was the kids and how excited they got, and how you all went out to your community and educated adults about it. You handed out reusable bags. You put signs up in public spaces. Can you just talk about the difference between, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Sometimes we have kids come to the station and they say that they're sometimes bored at school. They're not learning about things that excite them. And what stood out for me is just how excited you all seemed about learning about this and then sharing the information.
Well, personally, from a seventh grader, school can be boring sometimes. And most classes you're not going to like, and things are really boring. But to have this come in and have cafeteria culture make us feel like we can make a change and be activists, I think made our class, and specifically for me and kids in our class, made us really excited to make a change and us want to make a change. That's why we always, like, we're so excited to have cafeteria culture class come in during the day, because we get us so excited knowing that we can make a change and knowing that we have more, like, more knowledge now than most adults do. And knowing that we can educate people on this topic was just, like, so fun and amazing.
It's such a good point in that. That's what I think helps educate children, in the sense of, if you can empower the children to take action, if you can empower the children to find that voice inside of them that they can express, and you give them the tools to express that empowerment and to lay that out there. And that's what we try to do with the festival. We really try to, I think if we can inspire the children and the families who come to think in a different way, to kind of nudge them. And just sort of think slightly differently than they would have when they came in to the festival. I think then we've hit our goal, and that's what we're after. So, and I think if we could spread this sort of message wider, to schools and other communities, I think that would help change the world.
Yeah.
That is Jim Capobianco. He is co-creator of the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival. It is this weekend at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California. Microplastic Madness is screening on Saturday at 1 p.m. and Sunday at noon. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Maggie Dalencourt is a seventh grader at Brooklyn Urban Garden Charter School, and she's co-narrator of the film. She's featured alongside her fifth grade classmates from PS15 in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they were on a 2-year journey on a plastic-free and advocacy action program. And they did so much amazing work in their community. Litter was reduced by 40% and their cafeteria agreed to stop using styrofoam. We're also joined by Debbie Lee Cohen, co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness. She's also founder and executive director of cafeteriaculture.org. They work with youth to achieve zero waste schools and plastic free waters. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to 91.7 KALW, and you're in tune to Your Call, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join the conversation today by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can send a post or a comment or question on our website at KALW.org, or actually, YourCallRadio.org, and tweet us at YourCallRadio. Today on 1A, most of us today are expected to take part in active shooter training, but teacher unions say it's taking a physical toll on millions of school children, and they're asking a key question. Do these drills work? Lockdowns, school safety, and the impact on America's next generation. That takes place in the next hour with Todd Swillick on 1A, here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco, local public radio. Time now is 10:32. Good morning.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Well, we decided after Friday's media roundtable to spend the next 2 weeks looking at the presidential candidates' actual records and policies. And tomorrow we're going to start with former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. We are having some difficulty because we're finding that reporters are covering so many topics. They're not just looking at one candidate. So if you've seen any good stories about all of the candidates that dive deep, please email them to us, yourcall@kalw.org, because we are right now in the booking process. Today, we are talking about a very inspiring film, and we sure need more of this. It's called Microplastic Madness. It takes us to Red Hook, Brooklyn, where fifth graders were taking on the plastic pollution crisis. And after they became citizen scientists and educated their community, the amount of litter in their community was reduced by 40%, and their cafeteria agreed to stop using styrofoam, which is a huge deal because in New York City, schools were throwing away 850,000 styrofoam trays every single day. Today, we're joined by Maggie Dalencourt, a seventh grader. She's now a seventh grader, but she was a fifth grader featured in the film. She's also co-narrator. She's a seventh grader at Brooklyn Urban Garden Charter School. And you can see Microplastic Madness. It's part of the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland. This Saturday at 1, Sunday at noon, they've got a nice, amazing array of kid power films. Debbie Lee Cohen is co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness. She's also founder and executive director of Cafeteria Culture. They work with young people to achieve zero waste schools and plastic-free waters. And Jim Capobianco is co-creator of the Children's Film Festival. And he is also an amazing writer, director, and storyboard artist. If you have any comments or questions about plastic pollution, if you have any questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from Robert who says, this is a beautiful thing, having a seventh grader on the program to speak for herself and her peers. This shows wonderful respect toward these kids, in contrast to, quote, adults like the president who insult young leaders like Greta. On these issues, yes, let's listen to the wisdom of the kids. Maggie, you said something that caught my attention when I asked you about co-narrating. You said it was really amazing to actually use your voice in this film. Can you talk more about that? Because I feel like we hear so much about kids, but we rarely talk to kids or ask them to come on radio shows or television.
Well, I mean, to have this experience is amazing, and to use my voice now and at this radio station. But also co-narrating the film and having my voice present throughout the whole entire film was also really powerful in this, like, a normal film, because it's almost like a kid talking and sharing not their opinion, but what they learned, and like straight actual facts that are around this problem that people really don't care to listen to most of the time.
You know, the other thing, Maggie, that was pointed out in the film is by the year 2050, you and your peers will be 43 years old.
Yes.
And by that time, there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish if we don't make the drastic changes that you all are making.
Yeah, and that's really crazy to have more, because I couldn't go into it, but there are so many different species of fish and different things in the ocean. And to have more plastic and pollutions in the water than fish would be so crazy. And to have the population of fish go down because of those plastics would also be really crazy.
So I love that you say we actually teach people what we're learning. Tell us more about microplastics, because this is starting to get a lot more attention. We hear about plastic, but now we're hearing more about microplastic.
Well, microplastic is plastic, and microplastics are small pieces of plastic when, say, a water bottle goes into the ocean and it starts to degrade after a while, and it splits up into small little pieces of plastic that go into the ocean. And during the film, there is this one part where, I'm so sorry, I forgot his name, but a marine biologist, if I'm correct, goes into the ocean and finds a fish and goes to cut up open his stomach. And instead of there being, like, normal food, what a fish should be eating, it's all plastic. And that's what's surrounding our waters, and that's what fish are eating. But also, it's not just microplastics. It's also things like microfibers, which are found in our clothes.
Mm-hmm. And you did an amazing job of explaining that. So talk a little bit more about the fibers in our clothes and what you learned there.
What we learned was microfibers in our clothes. Because some of our clothes could be made out of plastic. So I'm not 100% sure on the process. I'm so sorry, I couldn't remember that. But it's where they turn plastic into our clothes. And every time we go to wash our clothes, the little microfibers come out into the washing machine and go down into our sewers and still get into our oceans like microplastics do.
It's not only that, they also get into the air when the dryer blows them into the air, and so they're just floating around, and it's
pretty
awful.
I also like to add on that, if that's okay. It goes into the air, but also a crazy thing is it's been found in our foods, like microplastics and microfibers, stuff like that, has been found to be in our toothpaste, beer, and drinking beer and like salt and like honey and different products like that, which is really crazy.
I believe they've even found plastics like as far as up in the Andes and the Himalayas and stuff.
Just
microplastic everywhere.
It's just really crazy and like mind-blowing, to be honest.
Debbie?
Oh, I think one of the moments in the film that for me, I still get kind of curious and freaked out every time I watch the movie thousands of times, is when Dr. Chelsea Rokeman, who is one of the experts that we interviewed for the movie and also a real inspiration to me personally, when she says we no longer think of microplastics as a marine pollutant, but as a global pollutant. So whereas I think it was so shocking to hear about marine plastic pollution. And now I remember the first time somebody mentioned that to me about dust, like just collecting a sample of dust off of leaves on trees and how much microplastics were in that. That was some years ago. That was part of the inspiration to make this movie, for people to understand the global implications of our uses of plastics, whether it's single-use plastics or even just washing our clothes. And I also wanted to say that was Dr. Marcus Erickson from Five Gyres, who Maggie was talking about earlier, who we were also very fortunate to be able to include in this movie.
And Jim, for those who are just tuning in now, there will be a lab demonstration with a marine biologist, like you said.
That's right.
Showing how clothing fibers break down in water.
That's right. Using the techniques
the
they did in the film. Yeah, Tierney Ties, who's a National Geographic explorer, she'll be there on Sunday.
Go ahead, Debbie.
And I'm so excited that she's doing this, because also I think it gives people an opportunity to see that teachers that. This is a lesson that you can do in your classroom, and I really feel the microfibers lessons that we teach, they're not that complicated, but it's a huge aha moment for our students over and over again.
Right. I think she's been in contact with you guys, right? She got some materials from you and
correct.
And she will have microscopes and all that stuff there. I mean, that's one of the advantages of having the festival at the Chabot Space and Science Center. They're set up for lab work and all sorts of other investigatory things. So it's going to be really fun and informative. I think people enjoy it.
Well, and if you're in the Bay Area, the festival is this weekend. Microplastic Madness is screening Saturday at 1 and Sunday at noon. Jim Capobianco is co-creator of the Bay Area International Children's Film Fest. This year, the theme is Kid Power. There's so many amazing films being screened this year. Maggie Delancourt is co-narrator of Microplastic Madness. 2 years ago, she and her fifth grade classmates really took on the plastic pollution crisis. And Debbie Lee Cohen is co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness, founder and executive director of CafeteriaCulture.org. They work with youth to achieve zero-waste schools and plastic-free waters. Let's spend some time now talking about how you were able to convince the cafeteria at your school, Maggie, to go styrofoam free. I had to watch the section about styrofoam a couple of times to make sure I didn't hear the number incorrectly.
But Rose, I just correct you
sure.
for one thing?
Yeah.
One thing about just to clarify that the school was already styrofoam free, and that was also a student-led action, along with Cafeteria Culture and other environmental organizations collectively working to get styrofoam out of all schools. But when we started the Plastic Free Waters program at Maggie's school when she was in fourth and fifth grade, they were already using compostable plates. So their action, their idea was, well, how do we get rid of the rest of the single-use plastics in school food service in their cafeteria?
Okay, well then can you tell us, because initially when they looked at compostable plates, they were too expensive. And,
right.
and then an organization was formed to allow schools from different areas to make a big order to bring the price down.
Correct. And that organization is called the Urban School Food Alliance. And I believe now there are 12 of the large school districts across the country. And it actually was an idea that we suggested in our very first meeting with school food directors in 2009. I'm sure they thought we were crazy then, where we said, well, what if New York, one of the largest school food service in the country and the second largest food service in the country only after the U.S. military, what if they co-purchased with a city like L.A.? Wouldn't that bring the numbers up further that could drive the prices down? And all I can think of is that they must have rolled their eyes and thought, like, what do these people know about city contracts, which are really complicated? But through a few years later, maybe that planted a seed, and a few years later, the school food directors from New York City were meeting with other school food directors, and secretly they started planning this other nonprofit organization that would bring school food directors together from the largest urban school districts. And five came together, then it was 10, now I think it's 12, and they're still looking for other, they're not just urban now, but they're looking for the largest purchasing power that they can combine to really influence and shift trends nationally.
Wow.
So we look at our own model and we think, wow, if we could bring the price down for a compostable plate and really encourage competition to drive the price down, imagine what we could do with the rest of school food, not just about packaging, but also scratch cooking, all of the things that are connected to really shift trends nationally in manufacturing and the way we serve school food. And what Maggie and her classmates were able to do was they led the first plastic-free lunch day in any New York City public school. It was a one-day initiative, but because of that action and because of the movie being now publicized and our city officials seeing the movie, we're actually planning now for a citywide plastic-free lunch day on May 15th with all elementary schools and hopefully as many middle and high schools as possible. And then we're also looking to make it wider. Like, why doesn't San Francisco join
yeah,
us?
Berkeley,
and now we have a city in Japan that wants to join us. And so we're thinking, like, let's make this bigger. And we really saw from Styrofoam that if you can do it one day and people can see the difference, that's all that has to happen. They just see it. And then they say, oh, well, why don't we do this every day? And so then maybe next year we're hoping that we have a menu day, one day a week, maybe every Friday, maybe it's Plastic Free Friday, every pizza day, where then that's just put in. And we're reducing maybe a million pieces of single-use plastic every Friday across New York. And then we think people say, well, why don't we do this every day? And that's really how we got rid of the styrofoam. And we're using that same model inspired by Maggie and her fellow classmates.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you were able to eliminate 860 styrofoam trays that were used every day in 1,800 public
schools. 860,000
in 1,800 right. public schools. And so just a couple years ago, you had the first free lunch, plastic-free lunch day. Maggie, you and your classmates conducted a waste audit in your cafeteria, and you talked about how hard it was and still is to find snacks and foods that are not packaged in plastic. Can you talk more about that and just how that has stayed with you over the years?
Well, for having kids want to always be eating chips and snacks, that's a kid thing. But a lot of these products are wrapped in plastic and non-degradable wrappings. And there was a couple of deli stores at their school, and every day kids would be coming in with plastic bags, both plastic wrap snacks. And to really get rid of that problem with buying that every day, it would have to be like a more eating healthy thing. And to be honest, that has changed me a lot with eating way healthier. I stopped eating a lot of snacks and stuff like that just to dive down on the plastic wrapping with packaging and stuff like that.
And how do you think about these issues 2 years later? I mean, you're really involved now in a lot of activism. You participated in a panel at the UN New York City Climate Week last year where you spoke about youth involvement.
Now carrying on from fifth grade has been a wonderful experience. The things I've gotten to do after I left PSST has been so amazing. I've got to do a lot of traveling and go to a lot of new places because of this. And to going on to middle school, where I attend now, Brooklyn Urban Garden Charter School, has been amazing because this school really focuses on plastic-free and is a really go-green school. And for us, we have a sustainability class, and sustainability is a mandatory class you have to take for our school, which I think is really amazing and really cool. So just moving on from PSST, I think, and doing all these, being able to go to all these places after ending off at PSST was really amazing.
We have another question from Robert for you, Maggie.
He
says, how do you feel about how adults are addressing this issue? Do you trust adults to deal with this? Are you and your peers hopeful for the future?
Trusting with adults, the thing I've brought up and a lot of people have brought up is that kids nowadays have almost, and us and like me almost personally, have more information and more knowledge on this like plastic problem than most adults do. And to bring our problems to adults like Mayor de Blasio, I feel like that we've brought so many problems to him, and he's done a lot to change. That's not almost one adult, but one higher-end person that we could trust. But when you bring this issue to a lot of adults, they just kind of block it off and don't want to deal with it because they feel like they're being blamed. But also there are a lot of adults that want to help when this issue is brought up, that want to help and make things better. Like all the panels I've been to and all the adults that were in the audience have come up to me after and asked like things they can do. There have been teachers that have come to these panels and asked what they can do in their classrooms, what they can do in their school to make things better. And I feel like some adults can be trusted, but I mean, it's just it's more of a preference and how people see things.
And again, Maggie, you are in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And so many young people are getting so involved around the climate crisis. And there have been a lot of articles recently, just one in the Washington Post, called The Environmental Burden of Generation Z. Kids are terrified, anxious, and depressed about climate change. Whose fault is that? What are your thoughts about this? I mean, when you talk with your friends about the climate crisis and what's happening to the oceans and pollution in your neighborhoods, what do those conversations sound like? And how are you all kind of dealing with all of this information?
Well, I mean, a lot of these things for my friends have been brought up more newly, and me having a lot of background information. I know a lot of kids these days have more, makes them feel depressed and, sad about it, but I feel like that there's a thing, that there's something we can do about it, and we just need to act on it. And me and my friends, that we talk about this, we don't feel more of this as like a blame problem and like the world's going to end and like everything's going to just die and like burn and burn. We feel like we have, with the things that kids are doing these days, we feel like we have a voice and we have more power than other generations have had, and there are things we can do about this problem.
Debbie, what has been your experience working with other kids?
I just have to say that, but you can't see, but I have this gigantic smile from ear to ear because I feel that's a nice gym. I mean, it really makes me feel like, oh, what I'm getting up for every day is so worthwhile. Thank you, Maggie, for saying that.
You're welcome.
And I really loved that Washington Post article. I thought it was so important. Cafeteria Culture is working with other organizations on hoping that we can get a climate literacy mandate passed in New York State. I think California might have a climate environmental education mandate that already exists. But what was missing in that article, it did say, like, well, it's important. There were some comments about how important it is to not just teach about the climate crisis and the problems, but also teach about solutions. But our organization, Cafeteria Culture, we feel that you have to take it one step further. We absolutely believe that you need to provide opportunities for students also to be the designers of the solutions and then also to have the opportunities to take action. And that's exactly what Maggie and her classmates did in fifth grade and that we portray in the movie. I feel that if students have those opportunities, they're just like what Maggie said, their energy, rather than going towards feeling sad and depressed, their energy is channeled towards taking action and feeling empowered. And not that they will solve all the problems, but they're going to do a lot. And we can already see how much influence Maggie and her class, Greta, another student of ours, Rebecca, how many of these students all over the world are all really, it's amplifying change everywhere.
And also just really these kids on the front lines of the climate crisis.
That's
because
right.
A lot of these kids in Red Hook were hit really hard by Hurricane Sandy.
Right.
It just, that's what's so amazing in this film is to see these kids so empowered and feel like, you know what, I want to learn about this and I want to do something about it.
That's right. You know, and that's what we're trying to do with the film festival. We're trying to just provide the tools and this exposure to kids who might think they, those are some other kids who are doing that, or that's some other community that's doing that. And they could actually learn that, oh, wait, I have the power. I can do something. Me and my friends, we can get out there and help change our world. And, you know, whether it's with climate things or other actions they could do that's bothering them.
Also, Debbie, to see the kids, again, these were fifth graders in this film. One young girl just talked about how much she loves animals. Another young boy made the direct connection between the plastic going to the fish and then goes into our bodies. I mean, the kids really, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I also feel that, you know, I go to city council from time to time to testify on plastic bills or education or something for our organization. But our experience has been that when a fifth grader can explain something really well to a policymaker, that they really listen. And it's not that our policymakers aren't smart. It's that our policymakers are overloaded with information like all of us are. And that there's something very special going on, and there's a real opportunity for as young as fourth and fifth grade, sixth grade students to actually learn issues and present them in a way that maybe helps to clarify them for our policymakers.
Speaking of that, Maggie, what was the experience like when the students went to City Hall and actually shared this information with politicians?
I remember in the film, I feel like it was one of our students named Angelina saying that when we got there, it wasn't just our school, PS15 and the fifth graders going to testify about this problem. It was other schools too. And going there and seeing other schools knowing, and maybe not as much as we did, but knowing about this and going to testify there was really amazing. And just to see everyone coming together on this big problem, because there were kids younger than us, there were third, fourth, fifth graders. There were also high school kids there. And to see that was just, like, truly amazing.
And it seemed like some of these politicians were learning about some of the data you shared for the very first time.
Yeah.
Which I think says a lot.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, final thoughts from all of you. Maggie, can you just, you know, we talk about these issues every day on the show and it's very overwhelming, but I have to say this show, this movie is so inspiring and all of the work you
do. Thank you so much.
Is so incredibly inspiring. And it's just amazing to see so many young people be so involved.
Well, I want to thank you so much and thank you for having me on this day today. I think it was a really good opportunity to share my opinion and to share what I've learned and meet other people and have questions asked, which I think was really amazing. I just want to say thank you.
Well, thank you for using your voice and thanks for all the great work you do. Maggie Delancourt is co-narrator of the documentary Microplastic Madness. She's featured along with her fifth grade classmates from PS15 and Red Hook, Brooklyn on a 2-year journey to take action on the plastic pollution crisis, and they did incredible work. Final thoughts from you, Debbie, and we also have an email from a listener who says, is your film for purchase?
Not yet, but it will be.
But it will be.
Right, it will be, great. But we're not doing that yet because we're still submitting it into festivals and looking for other opportunities, but definitely screening licenses we have, and we're really interested in getting it out to schools and other organizations, nonprofit organizations, businesses, anyone. Everybody can have a plastic-free lunch day.
Well, thank you, Debbie, for the work you do. Great work you do. We'd love to have you back with other students to continue these conversations.
Thanks. Oh, thank you, Rose. And Jim, also, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Debbie Lee Cohen is co-director and producer of Microplastic Madness. It'll be screening at the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California, this Saturday at 1 and Sunday at noon. Debbie's also executive director of Cafeteria Culture. If you want to bring this curriculum to your classroom, go to our website, yourcallradio.org, and you can find information. Jim, final thoughts from you. Again, the theme for this festival is Kid Power.
Kid Power. And I think, you know, everyone, bring your kids and come to the festival, support BASIF, and support these great filmmakers and kids and what they're doing and getting the word out. And we just like to create that platform so we can create a big megaphone for all these great organizations around the country, around the world, who are trying to change kids' lives.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad we've learned about your festival, and we will definitely feature it every year on the show.
Let's do it.
Jim Capobianco is co-creator of the Bay Area International Children's Film Festival. And again, it is this weekend, if you're in the area, at the Chabot Space and Science Center in Oakland, California. There's so many great films, especially Child of Nature. That looks like another amazing film. You can find the information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show, Damian Miner, our studio engineer, and thank you for joining us. We are, for the next 2 weeks, going to talk about the presidential candidates' records and their policies, and tomorrow we're going to kick it off with former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So I hope you can join us for that. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Calls One Planet series.